This podcast is brought to you by lineupmedia.fm.
Today's show is presented by DaVinci Smart Drink. Order yours now at lineupmedia.fm/DaVinci. DaVinci, excite better thinking.
You need a mental boost? DaVinci Smart Drinks were designed with professional thinkers in mind. With key ingredients shown to improve cognitive function and increase mental energy, DaVinci Smart Drinks excite better thinking. Drink a DaVinci. Let it go to your head.
You're listening to This Day in History, a podcast dedicated to examining history from a standpoint of determining which event on any given day had the greatest impact on our lives. Now your host, Tony Hubert and Armand Kachigian.
It's a new year and welcome back to This Day in History. We are off hiatus. My name's Tony Hubert, my co-host, my confederate, my protege.
Confrere.
Armand Kachigian.
Sidekick?
No, my protege.
Sidekick? Karloff? Fuck you! What's that from? Remember that? I loved it when you were Boris Karloff's sidekick in The Invisible Ray.
Ed Wood.
Correct.
Yeah.
Karloff? Sidekick?
So good. So good. You got some.
We Academy Award winning.
We do birthdays. Right. We do who died. We also discuss.
Have fun. We argue, we discuss.
Yeah, we argue. Mull,
we contemplate.
We contemplate a lot.
All right.
But we digress.
Yes,
first.
That too.
And what this show is about, if you haven't
it's
checked
been a while.
Us out already,
I got a lot to say.
Is right. we select about five big topics that occurred on this date, and we debate which one has had the most effect on the world we live in today.
My topics can beat up your topics.
They might be able to. Today. Sometimes Armand and right. I disagree. Other times we agree.
Oof, very rarely.
Very rarely, though.
Yes.
But today we agree that there's about five things that really affect the world that we live in today. And we'll get into those in a bit. But before we do that, we tell you what happened on this date in history, January the 3rd.
Go for it.
As we begin a new year. 1823, Armand, Stephen F. Austin, he receives a land grant in Texas from the government of Mexico.
And they named the capital after him.
Way to go, Stephen F.
Deference to
the
him.
Let me think of the train line. I want to say it's the Missouri, Kansas, and Texas. I think the MKT also had a famous Stephen F. Austin car on the Texas Special.
Well, we'll have to do a little something on interesting guy. We'll have to do something on him on his birthday.
Yeah. In 1870, on this date, this is a big one. You talk about projects. This wasn't no WPA project, though. Armand does not like those.
No, this one actually had a
this had a
something
purpose.
In mind, yeah.
It led to commerce. It's the construction, the beginning of construction, on the Brooklyn Bridge.
Now, I'm going to have to check this because I would assume this is, here again, this is a public works project, even though it's not Roosevelt. It doesn't have his filthy name all over it.
Oh, come now, come now. This is 1870.
Who was the designer?
Well, it wasn't Eads.
No, that's we know who Eads. I believe it's Auguste Roebling, wasn't it?
Auguste Roebling. Well, it's a suspension bridge.
I'll look it up.
Which catches favor.
Talk about it.
And I think, in terms of just to look at a suspension bridge, almost any suspension bridge, right? Whether it's the Brooklyn Bridge.
It was the longest, right?
Whether it's at the time. Whether it's the Golden Gate, whether it's the enormous one in Japan that spans the two islands through the channel, or if it's even as something as non-pretty as let's say, the Verrazano Narrows, between Staten Island and...
We strive for exactitude.
It's
John Augustus Roebling.
John Augustus Roebling.
Right.
The only thing I don't like about the Brooklyn Bridge is the stone is dingy in color.
Well,
the form is beautiful,
I think it matches the city.
Yeah. You know, have you ever been across it?
No, I haven't, but I've been to,
I've been across it in a car several times.
Never been to Brooklyn. Yes, I have.
You've been to Brooklyn, for God's sake. I've always wanted to do the walk in the they have a walking path across the bridge.
Okay.
I've always wanted to do that, and I've just never taken the time. But someday I'm going to do that.
Now, of course, you know who Stephen Brody is. You've heard the term, do a Brody?
Yeah, he jumped.
He jumped.
Now, when he jumped, did he jump from the traffic deck, or did he go higher? What did he do?
He jumped from a boat that was in the river, apparently.
Well,
yeah. And they said, well, if you did it, do it again. He said, no, I do it once.
Well,
yeah, that's famous. Well, but apparently he was in a boat. They threw a dummy off the bridge, and he jumped out of the boat.
Yeah.
And that's how he did it. Did his Brody.
Yeah. There's a Bugs Bunny cartoon about that, isn't there?
Right.
Okay. 1888. This is for Armand. He loves science.
And I missed this one.
And we like science on this show because science and history dovetail nicely. At the Lick Observatory, which, first of all,
I have no idea where that is.
I love that name.
Do you know where it is?
No. The refracting telescope, measuring 91 centimeters That's in big. Diameter, is used for the first time. Now, at the time, it's the largest telescope in the world. 1888, January 3rd. How about that?
Okay.
All right. Now, here's another one just for Armand. In 1911, in the East End of the grimy metropolis of London, two are left dead, sparking a political row.
Thank you.
Over the involvement of then Home Secretary Winston Churchill. Bum, 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 bum.
Involvement in what? That doesn't compute.
Why don't you do some research?
Involvement? I don't get it. Okay, I will.
Well, look, he's the Home Secretary.
Yeah.
They had a political row. Because of a gun battle.
And here's a trivia question.
Between some EastEnders.
Here's a trivia question for you, and the answer is not Winston Churchill. Who is the only Prime Minister of England to have all four of the major positions? Home Secretary, Foreign Secretary,
Clement Attlee.
Chancellor of the Exchequer, and Prime Minister.
John Major.
Wrong.
Disraeli.
No. James Callaghan.
Okay.
There you go.
Moving on, 1925. January 3rd, I find this one unique. Benito Mussolini.
Is that unique?
I'm not laughing. But he felt the need on this date to announce that he's taking dictatorial powers over Italy. Do you really need the announcement?
Well, he was duly elected. Listen, believe me.
It's true, he was elected.
At that time, he was very popular. There was no problem with that.
But why the announcement that I'm dictator?
Oh, I don't know. The Italians, they have this flair for pomp and... I'm sure he threw one hell of a party. I wonder if his mistress was there. I don't think she was at that time. Claire Petacci, the gal that they killed him with.
What a gig.
Hung him up.
She got hung by the feet.
They hanged her good.
All right. 1932, martial law in Honduras is declared to stop a revolt. By who, you ask?
Yep.
By banana workers fired by the United Fruit Company. That United Fruit Company, my God, did they cause some problems.
And that was before the CIA helped them out. And that was 20-something or 15 years before the CIA came along and really
got the banana republics rolling.
Got those Latin Americas in line.
1933, Minnie D. Gregg.
I think that's Craig.
Craig, sorry. She becomes the first female elected as the Speaker of the North Dakota House of Representatives. Now, at the time, that's the first female to hold a Speaker position anywhere in the United States.
All right. And here's one for you. I think I've even asked you this before. Who was the first woman Speaker of the House of Commons?
And she sat for a day, right?
No. She sat for...
Oh, she did. She sat for a long time?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Betty Boothroyd.
You have mentioned that before. Okay. 1945 on this date, we go to World War II. This is one of my favorites. I love this man. This is a man's man. Chester W. Nimitz. Yep, the USS Nimitz, named for him.
That's him.
The Admiral of the Pacific Fleet. He's placed in command of all U.S. naval forces in preparation.
Who was in command before?
Well, so we're talking all naval forces.
Oh, okay.
Remember, they had fleets.
Right.
So Halsey, Spruance.
Mitcher, or whatever his name.
Nimitz as well. They all had the 7th Fleet, 8th Fleet.
Yeah. So they
it's combined because they still think this is before the atomic bomb, obviously. We're on January 3rd, remember?
Yeah, it's still early.
And they know what's coming up, and here's what's coming up, and it's not pretty. It's not pretty, and it did not go they won, but my God, the cost. Nimitz has put in place all forces of the United States Navy in preparation for the assaults to come at Iwo Jima and Okinawa.
Man, those were too big.
And you talk about some costly real estate.
Bloody stuff.
My Lord. The American lives for those two
Japanese too.
And
I know we needed them, but that's
for those two Japanese rocks.
Yep.
Man, boy, you talk about guys who gave.
Yeah.
Gave everything. Those are the guys.
The ultimate sacrifice.
1957, Hamilton Watch Company introduces the first electric watch.
Okay.
I was shocked. I just put this down, Armand, because it happened in 1957.
It's pretty far along, isn't it?
I would think we didn't have an electric watch prior to that.
Okay.
1959, Alaska is admitted as the 49th U.S. state.
All right. What was the 48th?
Oklahoma. Arizona.
I think it's Arizona.
You think it's Arizona?
I think it's Arizona.
Okay. 1961, the United States severs diplomatic relations with Cuba over the latter's nationalization of American assets.
That's what commies do.
Well, that's their business. And
I'm shedding a lot of tears over the death of our great.
And one year later, Pope John the 23rd saw fit to excommunicate Fidel Castro.
It took him so long
from the church. 1 year later, right on the date.
Boy,
how about that?
Very timely.
You couldn't have got around to that earlier.
Yeah. How about one day later? Yeah. Jeez.
Diplomatic relations
Raul's
severed.
Probably still in the Catholic Church.
I think he is. 1990, right. January 3rd. I remember this well.
We discussed this, man. Yeah.
Manuel Noriega, former leader of Panama, surrenders to American forces.
I hate to admit it, but I think I forgot what song they kept playing.
It was a Def Leppard song.
Def Leppard, that's damn it. Okay.
Def Leppard.
Right.
1993, Moscow, Russia, George Bush and Boris Yeltsin signed the Strategic Arms Reduction Treaty, acronym START.
Right.
You can rip that up. That's gone. That'll be gone soon, won't it, Armand?
I hope so.
I think it will. In 1994, more than 7 million people from the former apartheid homelands received South African citizenship.
Okay.
That was very good.
That makes sense.
1999, the Mars Polar Lander is launched.
Is that the one that didn't make it because they had the measurements in feet instead of meters? Was that the Polar Lander?
Oh, gosh.
Yeah, can you imagine that? Yeah, one of them crashed because they
science.
Had the wrong. Yeah,
yep.
they once they
had you rocket scientists.
Feet instead of meters.
Also, some others. 1973. George Steinbrenner, on this date, he buys the New York Yankees.
How much?
Oh, I want to say 18 million.
Not even 10 million.
10.
But here, technically, it's 8.8 million because along with the Yankees, he got two garages from CBS. He bought them from William Paley. And they sold back the garages for 1.2 million. So he got the team for 8.8.
Let me tell you something. You know, the DeWitts in St. Louis with the St. Louis Cardinals would execute almost the exact same move.
Those garages across from
the
Bush.
The two big
those,
parking garages that used to flank the garages.
I remember those,
they
yeah.
bought them lock, stock, and barrel, the whole deal, and
kinda
then they sold off the garages, recouping
I'll bet.
Like well over 50% of the purchase price.
Yeah.
Therein lies the value. You know why? That garage is open every day.
Sure. Yeah, of course. Yeah. And
your
right ballpark,
your ballpark's open up. 81
days,
and
the
change.
Boss, they called him, Steinbrenner. You know how he made his money?
Well, shipping was his first.
Building,
yeah.
That's right. Very good.
Yeah, and that's why they have a business in Tampa, because they worked at Tampa Harbor.
You want to
port,
see,
rather.
Now, I think the estimate of what they're worth now is $1.2 billion. Does that sound right?
You know, it always varies. Forbes, you know, does an annual list. It'll be out soon.
Oh, I'm sure they're the most valuable, right? I think they're ahead of the Cowboys.
Well, in America, probably.
Right, in America.
Probably.
Not in the world. Is that Real Madrid or Manchester United?
In the world, it tends to go back and forth between Manchester United and Real Madrid or Barcelona.
Right,
this year, it'll
biggies,
be Barcelona or Real Madrid.
That's not a real sport.
It's a real business, though.
Okay, correct.
Yeah.
I love it.
All right.
Business.
And also, 1919,
one of your favorites. Hated people
Herbert
of all
Hoover.
Time.
What the hell did he do?
The wimp from West Branch.
Yeah, 1919, Herbert Hoover.
You know, here we go.
What happens, Armand?
Okay, first of all, through the war, we've gone through this.
Yes.
Hoover and his meatless Mondays and wheatless Wednesdays and food will win the war and all these shibboleths of the socialist basically thinks he won the war instead of the troops. So we win, you know, if there is such a thing as winning.
Well, there's
World
no
war
such
I,
thing as winning,
right?
Right.
Right. You know my
whoever lost
that.
Least.
Whatever. Yeah, right. Another big waste. He is put in charge of war relief in Europe because the Germans are still starving because the British still have the blockade, even after they won.
Yeah.
You know, so he gives them. And then, of course, now this probably is what cements Lenin into, you know, because the Bolsheviks, people were starving. There was a huge famine in Russia. Hoover gave them food, which, okay, we'll give him a break because he said, you know, food knows no politics or starvation.
The hell it doesn't.
He's always, you know.
No, that's just plain wrong.
Well, that's Hoover. Talking.
But every leader throughout history at some point has used food as a weapon.
Of course. Especially the Bolsheviks. But this is what cemented them. They probably would have been overthrown because there was famine everywhere.
Yes.
He sent food to Russia, too. That was humanitarian, and that's what— and
backed him up just enough to get the—
buttressed the Bolsheviks, and we've had problems with them.
And here comes Red Russia.
Right. So that's Hoover again. Thinks he can do everything. Of course, the Democrats wanted to run him for president in 1920, and Franklin Roosevelt said, "There's no better man I can think of." Franklin Roosevelt. Yep. Just look it up. That's what he said.
All right. Also, on this date in 1993, one of the greatest comebacks in sports history happens in an AFC wildcard playoff
game. The biggest in NFL. Yeah, I think it's the biggest.
The then Houston Oilers, now they play as the Tennessee Titans.
Yeah, Houston Texans.
Texans are, no, that's a completely different franchise.
They moved to Tennessee, right.
They are playing a road game at Buffalo. Now, Buffalo
Rich
has already
stadium.
Been to a couple Super Bowls.
Yeah, blown them both. Yeah.
And people are hoping that we can end this whole Buffalo thing.
I was.
Houston has an insurmountable lead at halftime. Armand, I turn off the TV, and I'm in college at the time, and I literally go out because I'm so disappointed that the game is that bad that I go find something else to do.
Yeah.
It'll be 2 hours later before I learn what happens.
28-3 at half, and then it was 35-3 in the middle of the third quarter.
Yes.
So it was a 32-point comeback. Frank Reich, of all people, because Kelly was
hurt. I got to tell you, he was a good quarterback.
Yeah, he wasn't bad. In fact, I think he engineered one of the biggest college comebacks, too, or something, if you look that up. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So anyway, yep, 32-point comeback. And they won in overtime on the foot of
Scott Norwood.
No, it was...
he had already been... gone.
Yeah, I know who this was. Christie.
Yep. Chris Christie. Then he would become governor of New Jersey.
That's right.
He was a lot slimmer when he was a kicker
he
for the Bills.
It right through the Washington, the two...
and then
Washington Bridge.
Then they blocked traffic coming out of the stadium.
That's
intentionally.
Correct. Oh, and speaking of which, I'm glad you brought that up because people, you know, were leaving.
Yes.
Leaving very early, right? Because middle of the third quarter, they're leaving. So they start listening on the radios, and they're winning.
It's one of those.
They start coming back, and they wouldn't let them back in.
Good
for them. So they climbed the fences. So they said, oh, the hell with it. They opened the gates and let them back in. Now, let them back in.
Do you know a lot of stadiums, if you just show up? Like,
that's half the, right?
No, hold on. Here's the thing. This used to be a thing in baseball, and a lot of people used to take advantage of it. But after the seventh inning, most ballparks just let you walk in.
I didn't know that.
Now, I don't
Bush
know.
Bush Stadium? I don't know. Do they do that?
Oh, yeah. They used to in the day.
Okay.
Yeah. You just walk
in. Where do you go? You get there places to sit?
Just walk. Usually. Go in. Find a seat. Because their thing was, well, you know, maybe they'll buy a hot dog.
Well, it's not a bad idea. I just didn't know.
You know, and the games, you know, you've missed the overwhelming majority of the game. Now, I don't know if the NFL ever let you do that. But I've done it before at events.
I don't think there's a seventh inning in the NFL, is there?
Well, there's the equivalent.
All right. You have to specify.
It's like the two-minute warning.
All right. Makes sense to me. You know me. I'm a capitalist.
Michael Milken, speaking of capitalism,
also my favorite capitalist.
Released from jail on this date.
Junk bond king earned about $1 billion in 4 years. That was his salary. No problem with that. That's what he worked for, Drexel Burnham Lambert.
Yep.
He was doing okay, and apparently what he did was completely legal. He was selling junk bonds, and that's fine. High-yield junk bonds.
It's highly speculative.
Ivan Boski. I think it was Boski, I believe.
I thought it was Boski. Boy, that guy had a big nose.
Yes.
Ooh, not an attractive fella. Usually those guys have that fixed. Ivan didn't. Yeah. He didn't see fit to have that schnauz taken care of.
He implicated him. Yeah, that was. Yeah. Anyway, he did 22 months. So, but you know, now that he got out, he's a big philanthropist, and he's done a lot for medical research and you know, fighting melanoma.
Mm-hmm.
Way to go, melanoma, Michael.
He's made something of himself. Well, he already had made something of himself.
Oh yeah, he made something of himself.
Okay, halfway through, we like to do birthdays, and then we go back to the big things that have affected the world we live in the most. And we've got five to debate. But before we do that, who was born on January the 3rd? I got a list I'm going to run through. Let's see how many of these Armand likes. We go to the year 106 BC. The Roman philosopher, the politician, lawyer, Cicero.
That's right.
He's born.
The Philippics. That's what led to his end.
And Lord, how would he have ever known that a beautiful West Side Chicago suburb would be named after him?
Yeah, I was just there, actually, last
week. Oh, were you?
Yeah, last week. One of my friends, best friend's mother lives there. Went to see her.
Can I say something about Cicero?
Yeah.
Not the man. I know the man. The town.
Okay, the town, yeah.
He'd be honored.
I think so.
Those are the cleanest alleys I have ever seen in my life. You know what I'm talking about,
okay.
Armand.
If you say
No.
So, venture into
drive down a neighborhood in Cicero.
Okay.
The alleys are all paved in concrete. So someone forked it out for that.
Well, I think Cicero would have used marble, I think.
Cicero would have, but Chicago, marble.
Yeah. There's probably a few
wise guys. But they had guys
put in the cement, too.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I've always wondered. These beautiful alleys.
I don't wonder.
These beautiful alleys in Cicero, Illinois, Berwyn as well has them, where everything is nice and neat, no cars, no trash, no nothing, and the kids can still, you know, go back and play in the alley. How many bodies in those alleys?
Oh, 2,000 or 3,000.
Easy.
Okay.
Easy.
Okay. Now,
did you ever hear the thing when they drained the lake inside Sportsman's Park, the old Sportsman's Park in Chicago, the horse track?
Yeah. What about it?
Well, they found all sorts of 1930s vintage cars.
Cool.
With the drivers still in them.
Right on. I love that city. All right, a little bit on Cicero, though.
Yeah.
I do agree. I don't know. Actually, he was a very just man. In fact, you know, the first triumvirate, I think we've discussed this.
Yes, we have.
Crassus, Caesar, and Pompey.
Mm-hmm.
They wanted him to be part of it, which I guess would a quadrivirate or whatever.
A quadrivirate? Yes, and why did Cicero say no?
Because he thought it threatened the Republic. He thought that the Senate should have the power.
He really was for the Republic.
Pissed off some people. Yeah, and Caesar didn't like that much.
Well, no.
But he forgave him, but he wasn't saddened enough by Caesar's death, apparently, and he and Mark Antony had problems. These are the Philippics.
Yeah.
These are the he was orating in the Senate against Mark Antony. That's the wrong guy to make him.
He might not want to.
Yeah, so anyway, they caught him. He ran away. Mark Antony caught him, cut his head off, and his hands, because his hands are the ones that wrote the Philippics.
Yeah.
They put him up on those steps where Marius and Sulla, where they put the traitors, and they put his head up there. I don't know if it was on a pike or what they put it on.
Now, where did the Sulla lead to, though? The steps led to a monument.
They were steps of size. I don't know, on the Capitoline, on the hill, I don't know where they were. But anyway, that's where they put Sulla and Marius, the traitors. Antony's wife didn't like him much either, and pulled his tongue out and stuck hairpins in it while his head was up there. You know, so they put his hands in his head up there. So not a good end for Cicero.
God, all these guys, it never ends well.
Yeah, that's part of the deal.
Now, he was born on this date.
Yeah,
we do deaths at the end of the show.
106.
1806. Henriette Sontag, the German soprano and actress. You know her?
No.
You usually love those sopranos.
I know, but this one,
I don't doubt
there's any recording of this one.
1883, Clement Attlee is born. He would be the soldier, a lawyer, a politician, and
socialist.
A prime minister of the United Kingdom.
Yeah.
1892.
Me no like.
1892, the philologist?
Philologist, yes.
And author J.R.R. Tolkien is born.
No, I think a philologist likes words or
well, he
or
sure
language,
did.
Right?
Language. He sure did.
Logos is Greek for language, correct?
Honestly,
or speech.
Honestly, have you ever really slogged through the Fellowship?
No. I've read the Hobbit because I had to.
I enjoyed the Hobbit.
Okay. Yeah, it was okay.
The other ones. I think I got partway into Return of the King.
I've never seen the trilogy either.
It's very good.
Trilogy.
Yeah, it's very good. I like it. Okay, 1897 on this date.
How about
Marion Davies?
Oh, okay.
Is born.
Well, we're going to talk to
her. I'm going in chronological.
Okay,
Marion Davies. This is one of your favorites.
Well, you keep bringing this up. Anyway, she was, of course, the mistress of William Randolph Hearst.
She's the mistress of Citizen Kane.
Right.
Let's go.
Technically, though, she would have probably been. The movie was based not only on him but on Samuel Insull too. He was a big tycoon too, and it was his wife that he built the opera house for that whole sequence.
Yep.
Ray Bills.
Mm-hmm.
So technically, Marion Davies probably would have been the first wife, even though Hearst had a wife and she was the mistress.
Uh-huh.
The wife would never grant Hearst a divorce, And right. he didn't want it anyway because it would cost him too much.
No, it cost him too much money. Yeah.
So anyway.
Yeah, he lived in California, for God's sake.
San Simeon, yeah, which.
They probably had that 50-50 rule out there already.
Yeah, well, you know what
or you could go
George
to Nevada.
Bernard Shaw said about San Simeon. This is what God would have built if he'd had the money. So, yeah. Great quote about. So anyway, they were all right. So I guess
you ever been to San Simeon?
Yeah, I have. It's really what it is.
I've yet to. I've yet to
quite
go.
Quite plush. Anyway, so she lived with him, and she really was she's a pretty good actress.
Right.
Unfortunately for her, he kept wanting to put her in dramatic roles, and she was more of a comedian and funny and great. Made a lot of silent films. When they went to talkies, it wasn't so great. She was still okay, but not so great because she stuttered a little bit, so she had to take voice lessons.
Well, and she needed diction.
She needed a philologist. So anyway, she wanted to get some of these parts, but the problem was she was at MGM, and Irving Thalberg was screwing, Norma Shearer, his wife.
Yeah.
So she got all the plum parts.
Yeah.
Which is fine because I think Norma Shearer was great.
Now, did Norma Shearer get a Thalberg Lifetime Achievement Award?
I don't know if they had them by then. Well, I guess they did. Maybe. I don't think she did.
Maybe in memoriam she got one.
Yeah, she got Thalberg. So, that's what Joan Crawford said. It's hard to get good parts when your competition's fucking the boss. That was Joan Crawford. So, anyway, what you've always alluded to is the Oneida scandal or the Thomas Ince scandal.
Yes, on the boat.
On the boat. I think which it was 1924.
Which the movie The Cat's Meow is based on. The Bogdanovich film, which I think is a fine film.
Yeah.
It's a good piece.
It's interesting. There was the silent film director, Thomas Ince, was on the boat.
Yep.
Apparently, Mr. Hearst was rather possessive. And he thought that Charlie Chaplin, who was also on the boat, was messing around with Marion Davies.
Uh-huh.
So he apparently drew a revolver and thought he was shooting Charlie Chaplin, when in truth, Ince, who I don't know, I guess looked like him, but in the dark, and when you're an old guy, everybody looks like Chaplin.
Yeah.
And he shot Ince. So, of course, they're out at Catalina, I believe, somewhere out there between L.A. and Catalina.
Yeah, they're in the Straits of California.
They go up the coast.
Yep.
And find somebody a coroner that Hearst knew or had bribed or both, and made sure that all this was covered up. And the interesting thing was Llewellyn Parsons.
He drowned from a bullet wound.
They said it was, he had indigestion, which, you would have trouble digesting a bullet.
And seawater.
So technically that is the proper diagnosis.
They didn't lie.
And anyway, Llewellyn Parsons was also on that ship, and what do you know? Luella, for the rest of her life, had a job at the Hearst newspaper.
Plum rolls.
Yeah, isn't that nice?
Yeah, good for her.
So everybody shut their mouths, and that was the end scandal. Oh, but Marion Davies actually lent him money when he was, he was really hurting in the late 30s. Everything's going to hell. His newspapers and everything. She gave him $1 million. She was that kind of gal.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. And took care of him in his old age, too. Really, really upright gal till he dropped dead.
How about that? 1901, born on January 3rd. Nguyen Dinh Diem.
Oh, yeah.
Now, he would be the Vietnamese lawyer and politician, the first president of the Republic of Vietnam. He was born on this date. However, he would be assassinated in 1963.
Right. 3 weeks, I think, exactly before Kennedy.
Before Kennedy.
Yeah, November 2nd.
And Kennedy...
With our good wishes.
Kennedy was on
CIA
record
was fine with
as saying that was that his assassination was a gut punch.
That's okay with us. No, it was okay with us. Because he was getting a little bit too big for his britches, So
all right.
Got rid of him.
1907, born on this date. He's Welsh. He's also American. He's an actor and a director. Ray Milland.
Who won the Academy Award for?
1945. And he wins it as a director.
No, he's an actor.
Actor? All the President's Men.
Lost
All the King's
lost
Men.
Weekend.
Lost Weekend.
Lost Weekend.
No, I never would
He's a boozer.
That. 1911, John Sturges.
Okay.
Are you a fan of Sturges?
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Great Escape. Great movie.
How can you go wrong?
I think he did The Magnificent Seven, too.
He was on a roll.
He's pretty good. I like John Sturges.
1923, one of my favorite coaches. I got to meet this man.
I think he's Mia Farrow's. No, of course. No.
Not.
That's John Farrow.
That's John Farrow. What do you think?
Yeah, okay. We've gone over this guy, too, I think.
So I have met this man, football coach, sportscaster. He's a delightful guy.
You matriculate down the field with him?
I wanted to matriculate down the field just because he was there to show him I could do it. But born 1923.
Toss, power, trap.
Yes.
I
Hank
guess that
Stram.
Was the first time they mic'd a guy. And it was really good.
Early NFL films. Yeah. Early NFL films, I'm telling you, built on two men, Vince Lombardi And Hank Stram.
Hank Stram. Love him.
Oh, he was a Jones.
He was a good announcer, too. He and Jack Buck.
Boy, did
Buck
he wear
great.
A bad rug, though, at the end.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, doctor.
Yes.
I mean.
That was a divot.
I remember. So, Armand, we were doing a week at the Super Bowl and our radio show and everything. And we have a nice little setup, as everyone does. They give you a little card table and a phone line. You know, do your radio.
Oh, good for you.
And, you know, we bring Hank over and Jay Randolph Jr. is with us. And he looks and sees Hank coming and he tells me, he goes, it's great to see Hank, but look at that divot on. And I'm not kidding. I mean,
yeah,
oh.
Yeah, you could hardly tell.
No.
If you were
so natural.
If you were 2,800.
Boy, but God, was ever. I never. Everyone loved him, Armand.
Oh, I like.
Everybody
like a nice
loved
guy.
Him. I've never heard anyone say a cross thing about Hank Stram. 1926, born on this date. The conductor, producer, he would become famous for Four Lads from Liverpool. George Martin was born. 1929, I'm going to get your take on this guy as well. what would we have if we didn't have spaghetti westerns?
I guess, yeah.
We'd have a dish of spaghetti, I guess. Nice. Sergio Leone is born.
Right.
Favorite Leone film?
Once Upon a Time in America. And it wasn't what it was.
Not the Western.
It was a spaghetti gangster
you.
Movie.
Spaghetti
yeah.
gangster, yeah. yeah. 1930, a good character actor, Robert Loggia,
yeah,
is born. Love. I just saw him in Scarface the other night.
Yeah.
And that was a great turn
for
him.
You want me to believe that Omar was a stoolie because Sosa said so?
Oh.
You bought that line.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's him.
1932, Dabney Coleman
and
born.
I have a connection with him.
Do
one
you
of,
really?
One of my buddies Can knocked I? Up his daughter.
Really?
You
that's
bet.
Your connection?
That's right. One of the guys in my acting class. Attaboy, Glenn. There you go.
Okay. All right.
So I don't know if he ever did marry his
I
daughter.
Liked his work in 9 to 5.
I liked him in Tootsie.
Oh, he was
good
director in Tootsie.
He's always good. He's a great yeah. guy. Great actor.
Well, he played the asshole, though. And he played it well.
Well, 9 to 5, yeah. He was
well, and Tootsie, he wasn't
well,
the
he
most
wasn't
likable
the worst,
guy.
Yeah, he wasn't the worst. Yeah, he was an asshole.
And another game.
But that doctor, the doctor was kissing everybody.
Okay, you may not, because this may not have been your speed at the time, but he plays a character in War Games with Matthew Broderick.
Oh, yeah, yeah, right.
That's from
right.
Out at NORAD.
Yeah.
Nails it again.
He's always a good, yeah, a man in the position, abusing his privileges, abusing power. That's what he's good at.
1939, this guy was just in town here in St. Louis where we record our program. Bobby Hall.
Have you met him?
Yes, many times. In fact.
Golden Jet.
Okay, so Bobby. First of all, Bobby talks like this. Armand,
oh, does he?
It's good to see you, Armand. It's just so great to be here and
I
see
feel like
you,
I've
Armand.
Met him already.
And Armand, I just want to say I love your show. And and boy, if you would have seen Brett the other night, he really scored a good one. See, that's what, it breaks me down to talk like Bobby.
All right. Yeah, you talk like Bobby. I talk like
no, so,
Robert Loggia.
So when I would cover hockey, sitting in the press box, often he would be up in the press box with us, and many a game, the guy who I used to go with do the post-game sound from the locker rooms, guy's name was Brian McKenna, another guy was Rob Fisher. On more than one occasion, Bobby sat with us for some reason, we don't know, and basically it was just hit you in the shoulder every time Brett did something, but it was fun as hell.
Proud father.
And he had good stories. But boy,
I'll bet.
Boy
I'll bet.
This guy has had
a gold
fun.
Name.
1946, John Paul Jones.
I know this guy.
Yeah, I love
Not
how they
the
say
the Bonhomme Richard, yeah. Paul, John Paul Jones. You know, my favorite Led Zeppelin album is In Through the Outdoor.
Oh,
and
is
he
it
did
really?
All that music. That was great.
Good for you.
Great stuff.
Now, here's one I loved when I was about 10 years
we
old.
We all had our
1950,
fantasies.
The American actress, and they also list her as a businesswoman.
Okay.
Sure.
I don't mind. And the forgotten singer, director, screenwriter, and producer.
But Victoria Principal is born. And circa 1978, 79.
Yeah, circa.
Oof. Give me a second.
I had a lot of fun with myself.
Farrah.
Victoria.
Kate Jackson.
Right. Cheryl Ladd.
Cheryl Ladd.
Oh, man. Cheryl.
Oh, what I call the natural era.
Yes.
Before augmentation.
Before sex with other people.
Before augmentation and aerobicides.
The golden.
Where either you had it or you did not.
That was the golden age of self-abuse.
Mm. All right. 1956, Mel Gibson born.
Okay, another Academy Award winner, but for director.
Yeah, for Braveheart.
Of course, very good.
1964, Cheryl Miller, the American basketball player and coach.
Where does she coach? Does she coach Tennessee? UConn? Where
well,
she
she's USC grad. So automatically, you do not like her because you are a Bruin
guy,
and she is the older sister of Reggie Miller.
Oh, okay.
And I think, as even her house will agree, she is the best basketball player in the family.
Ooh, you think Reggie would go for that? You think he agrees?
I think Reggie shot better as a perimeter shooter than Cheryl. I think the all-around game, though, and let's equate for gender as well, but the all-around game. Cheryl, more of a complete player.
Okay.
1968, Lorenzo Fertitta, born, the big casino and sports promoter in Las Vegas. Two Formula One drivers, both born on the same date, both drove against each other a lot. Jarmo Littinen and multiple world champion Michael Schumacher.
I assume these guys are retired now.
They are now. Michael Schumacher, I won a six-time world champion. I got to see him win at the United States Grand Prix once. One of the most boring races. Well, first of all, he might have been German, but he was driving a Ferrari. Never mind.
Okay, well,
still in the Axis.
Right, well,
bad analogy.
Yeah, Mussolini. Well, the Finns were in there too.
Yeah, that's true. So 1981, the little brother of Peyton Manning, Eli Manning, is born. Who has won?
And is he the best quarterback in that house?
Well, now Peyton will say that the best athlete in the Manning house is their older brother, Cooper.
Okay.
Who got an injury and was never able to play much beyond. But they will all attest. I think they attest to it in their documentary called The Story of Manning or The Book of Manning. It's a very good film to watch.
Okay.
About, you know, what it's like to grow up with a dad who's an NFL quarterback. And then to reach that height yourself.
That is some family.
It's a great family. It's a great documentary. But they both say Cooper, the older brother, is the best. Okay, now to the events that have perhaps
shaped
had the most effect on the world we live in today. Let's take you back to 1521 and the excommunication of somebody who had a nail, a piece of paper, and a hammer.
I thought they were feces. Oh, they're theses.
Theses,
Armand. I misread
theses.
That.
All right,
great.
But Pope Leo
Wittenberg.
Pope Leo X decides to excommunicate Martin Luther in the papal bull. Is that where you get the
papal
word?
Yeah, no, of course not.
Papal bull.
Yeah.
Decet Romanum Pontificum.
Now let's see what that means. Decet is 10, isn't it?
10th Roman Pontiff.
Oh, there you go.
So
Pope Leo X.
The 10th.
Got it.
In his, so
okay.
I think we're doing that right from the Latin.
I recall my Latin. Okay. Yeah, there it is.
So this really begins the Reformation.
Yeah, sure.
And
does.
That has had an effect on us that we live with
day. And that kind of sucks. I wish we still had indulgences. We could do whatever the hell we want and go to heaven. Wouldn't that be great?
And you can do whatever the hell you want now and go to heaven if you're truly sorry for what you've done, bad.
If it's bad
and you're not truly
You're not guaranteed being sorry. But if you pay the Catholic Church, then you're guaranteed.
Only if you're German.
What?
Let me tell you, my grandmother-in-law believed in that.
So do I. Listen, if you're going to believe in God, you might as well believe in indulgences. That's what the church says, right?
It's the hell of a revenue generator.
Yeah, why not?
I absolve you.
You know, and these do-gooders like Martin Luther, come on. Mind your own business.
How long do you think it took him to make the list, though?
There were, 95?
95.
I don't know. He had plenty of time.
By the time you get to 70, aren't you, like, splitting hairs?
He was a real fun guy to be around,
really
apparently.
Splitting hairs?
I don't know how many, God.
I say this is a big one.
95 theses.
I don't know if it's going to be my leader today. I might surprise you with my leader today.
You're going to beat Martin Luther. Okay.
Martin Luther's tough to beat, though.
Okay.
You got a thing? You got something?
What do you got?
Well, it's coming up.
Mine's still the comeback so far.
19 affects
More than Martin Luther. Frank Reich, anytime. All right.
1777.
This is
at Princeton.
Yeah.
Now, for Americans, this is a big one, and I've been to Princeton, and I've seen the first capital of the United States right there, smack in the middle of Princeton's campus.
All right. Well, this is
This is the battle where General Washington, that being George, defeats Lord Cornwallis. at the Battle of Princeton, January 3rd, 1777.
And this was like the 1-2 punch. First it was Saratoga, Trenton, and then Princeton.
Trenton and then Princeton. Because
those are the two. There weren't 60 casualties or something.
Not a lot.
Yeah, right. But it's not like Okinawa.
You could declare a win.
Right, exactly.
And it's not exactly Vicksburg-Gettysburg either.
Yeah, no.
But it was something, and they needed it, and they needed it right then.
Right. So this is a 1-2 punch. It gave the American Revolution credibility. They swelled their ranks a little bit. They got more people to enlist.
Yeah.
And then they died at Valley Forge, but that's a different story.
It was a hell of a marketing ploy to get people to enlist.
Yes, they were eating stones at Valley Forge.
So as in terms of affecting the world we live in today,
yeah, I guess that's a pretty big
one. It's a big one because, Armand, if they don't get that 1-2 punch, because people forget about Trenton, which is a major.
Yeah.
Okay. If they don't get that 1-2 punch, I don't know what the appetite for the American Revolution is beyond January
French involved too,
of 1777. That might have just faded and gone away, and the colony would have persisted, and we probably would have ended up with a Commonwealth situation like Canada at the end of the day.
Which would have been okay with me, too, instead of the Civil War.
Jeez. Okay, 1919. This one I do think we feel to this day.
Yeah, I'm surprised you brought this one on there, but okay.
Why would you be surprised?
Because I don't even know if it's true. Like we said, we were talking about this. The Paris Peace Conference. Well, you go ahead. You read it. It's your entry.
The 1919 Paris Peace Conference featuring the Emir of Iraq, Faisal I.
As portrayed by Alec Guinness.
Yes, true. In agreement with Zionist leader
Chaim.
No, Chaim.
No, it's Chaim.
I can't do that
correctly.
You're Armenian. You're Armenian. You can speak a certain amount of Yiddish. I cannot. Chaim.
Yeah.
Is that even?
Chaim. You got a back of the throat.
I understand that, but it's Weissman.
Weissman. Yeah.
Yeah. So Chaim Weissman on the development. They agree. Faisal and Weissman on the development of a Jewish homeland in Palestine.
Right.
So this lays the groundwork
in
1919 for a lot of things to come, and then gets realized in 1947.
We've discussed this. This all started with the Balfour Declaration. You know, and Chaim Weissman, we talked about him. First president of Israel. Wait a minute, hold it. He was the first prime minister of Israel. First president was David Ben-Gurion. Chaim Weissman was a chemist. He developed the cordite. Remember, we were talking about all these duds?
Yes.
Dud shells?
Yes.
He's developed the cordite
fuse.
Fuse on the tips. And he won a homeland for his people from Arthur Balfour, the foreign secretary. And here we go. Now, I don't know how Faisal of Iraq has the actual juice to sign this. What gave him authority at that time?
It would have been the Home Office in Britain that would have had to give him the authority.
Well, they're splitting up the Ottoman Empire, so it's technically
the Foreign Office. Had to give him the
Balfour again, I guess. I'm going to have to read up on this, but there was no Iraq back then, as I read. There's Transjordan and all that. Where does this Iraq come from? Because that was later, right?
No, it's pretty much right after they're redrawing the lines quickly at this point.
Did they call it Iraq? Okay.
So,
The Paris Peace Conference. What a mess! You know, Wilson and his 14 points. What did Clemenceau say? Oh. God, only had 10.
Yeah, you have 14.
Yeah. All right.
Now here's a biggie.
Okay.
1977. Four words.
This may be the big one.
Yeah. I think this might win the day in terms of the thing that has affected the world we live in the most. January 3rd, the incorporation of the Apple Computer Company.
It's just a fad, Tony. Get over it.
Yeah, my uncle said that once about drive-ins.
He was right about that one.
No.
I was one of the few people who thought that hula hoops were just a fad. And look how
that's a good exercise.
Burgeoned, fructified.
Now, Apple, and I'm not speaking about
Jobs and Wozniak, of course.
Jobs and Wozniak, and specifically, like Ford with the assembly line.
Yeah.
Okay, not that it's the best product. You will find plenty of computer science people that will tell you
there's
stronger processors and there are the iPhone, you know, in terms of power and processing power can get wiped off the face of the earth with an Android. But what Apple did is made it relatable. They made it relatable to the user.
Did you read the book about him?
Yes.
Okay. Was it worth reading?
Yeah, it is. Okay, my son gave it to me for
Christmas. Not a real nice guy, right?
No, he's not.
Okay.
No, he's not.
Hey,
but he understood one central principle. It's got to be usable, and the person has to be able to relate to it. And from the very beginning, because my first computer was an Apple II as an 11-year-old.
When did that come out?
82, and I got mine, I think, in 83.
Okay.
And
boy, you're way ahead of me.
Yeah.
I'll tell you that.
But in everything that even I don't know what you use for a phone today. You're an iPhone guy?
No, I got the Android.
You got the Android.
But
okay. But
I don't like it.
Well, see, I use the iPhone for one simple reason. I use a Mac for one simple reason. I feel that the products are intuitive and they're much easier to just get into.
You say so.
I think that, you know, what they created, what Apple created, really has defined the world we live in today. Because all of the things that can, you know, it doesn't stop.
Yes.
I mean, it just keeps going and going.
But don't buy the stock.
One more. 2009. Now, years from now, we may say that this is a bigger deal than it is. But a mere 7 years ago, eight years ago, on this date. January 3rd, the first block of the blockchain of the decentralized payment system Bitcoin, called the Genesis block, was established by the creator of the system, Satoshi Nakamoto.
Which is, I believe, a pseudonym. They don't know who that really is.
They don't know who it is. But there's two things at play here. One is Bitcoin, which you own some of.
No, I don't.
Oh, you don't?
I wish it was going
did
down.
Did you sell it?
No.
I thought you had any.
Never had any. But you can buy stock in it. I had some options.
Okay. So, one, Bitcoin, just introducing a new currency.
Great.
Two, blockchain technology.
I don't even know what that is.
It's hard to explain for the computer very literate of you. You'll understand what blockchain is.
Well, send us your
explanations.
I'll read them.
This date and this event may become much more important in the few years.
You want to scare the hell out of governments? You start making things like this. Because when you got Bitcoin and people can virtually barter and, you know, things like that.
And the government don't get a taste.
Exactly. Boy, you want to scare the
hell
out of
government. Well, and that's also what blockchain technology can help to provide. There's one marketplace online. I think it's called Open Bazaar. It uses blockchain, okay? And it allows peer-to-peer, you and I.
Excellent.
We go through each other. Now, there's a moderator in case it's needed. Be a third-party person.
Of course, yeah.
It's a multi-signature contract. But if you want to buy something from me, you know, you send the funds over. We see that the funds are there. It doesn't get released to me. I send to you.
Perfect.
You receive.
Wonderful.
You inspect. Is it good? Yes.
Thank you.
Release of funds. Everyone's happy.
Yeah.
No taxes.
Right. And it's a public exchange, which means that you don't have to worry about that. They're worried about money laundering. That's a big thing. Or hacking and theft, which, of course, could be a problem.
Well,
but once you get that quantum computing, you don't have to worry about that.
So the hacking thing on blockchain, it would take an enormous effort to just even manipulate or damage the data.
Okay, great. So it's safe.
So much so that it may not be worth the end result.
Do you remember this story? Now, this is about three or four years ago, maybe not even. This guy had a computer, I guess, and he had bought Bitcoin at the very beginning.
Uh-huh.
And it was worth like $8 million worth of Bitcoin.
Uh-huh.
And the stupid ass didn't know. He threw his computer away. And
so some server?
All these people are looking through this. Well, it was in his hard drive, I guess.
Yeah.
And all these people are looking through this landfill looking for his computer.
Absolutely.
Okay, I thought...
Yes.
I wonder if they ever found that thing. It's worth like $8 million or whatever in Bitcoin.
Literally like throwing away cash.
Exactly. Yeah, $8 million, yeah.
All right. So I'm going to go with...
Wait a minute. I think we've forgotten a big one. 1944, we were going to discuss...
Oh, well, it's not that it affects the world we live in today.
No, but
Armand and I just think it's damn cool.
We like this guy.
So I'm going to go...
You want to talk about a real man.
First of all, I'm going to go with Apple. The incorporation of Apple being the most important thing. Second vote... Martin Luther being excommunicated.
George Steinbrenner.
Steinbrenner.
By the Yankees.
Okay, now this one, we just think this is damn.
Yeah, this is one of our my heroes because I love this show.
February 3rd, a naval ace, because he's a Marine.
I think it's January 3rd.
January 3rd, I'm sorry. Yeah. January 3rd, naval ace.
1944.
In 1944, Greg Pappy Boyington
Yep.
He is shot down in his Vought F4U Corsair.
Corsair, yeah.
And he is shot down by Captain Masahiro Kawato.
I'm not sure about that.
You're not
sure?
They
think old Masahiro's full of shit.
Really?
Yeah.
But he claimed the kill.
He claimed it. He
sure did. He have a...
But there are like 70 zeros up there, and nobody really knows.
And he didn't get verification?
No. And that was never verified. But he's been bragging about it, or was.
Was.
Until he dropped
it. And he was flying the Mitsubishi A6M0.
Right.
Which is, to this day, I'll never be in a Mitsubishi. This is what I've wondered about.
I'll never be in a Zero.
Okay, if you are a World War II veteran,
yeah,
how in the hell did you react when up comes rolling a Honda or a Kawasaki?
What about a Porsche? You're making tanks.
Well, they're making Panzers.
Yeah, Volkswagen. Well, okay.
I couldn't.
That's globalization, buddy.
No, but I'm sorry. Something that was sent to kill me? I couldn't buy the consumer version
live
of.
And let live. You know, when I was in medical school, in the clinic, I clipped the toenails of a Focke Wulf pilot.
Okay.
I think that helped breach the
really,
gap.
Really? That was the healing?
Yes. I think that helped breach the gap between our two countries.
You can believe that.
After a terrible war.
All right.
War.
So, first of all, his squadron.
VMF
amazing.
214 based on Vella Lavella.
Yeah. And the plane itself. The Corsair. I had an uncle, Norman Williams, Marine, young Marine, and he was not a flyer, but he loved the Corsair to his dying day.
It's a great model.
And
every kid made one of them.
He had the remote control models that you would go out and take off from a little remote control runway.
Yeah.
He had to go to a park to do, and he brought me out there and launched this. I mean, it was amazing. But those guys love those planes. It's a beautiful aircraft.
They like to fly those. These guys that are like the
The Confederate
the
Air Force. Yeah,
and those guys.
Yeah, the
like
two.
That one.
The Corsair and the P-51.
Well, you know, Pappy always flew the worst plane.
Well,
because he wanted everybody to know.
If I learned anything from Baba Black Sheep,
yeah, which was mostly bullshit.
I know it is.
Baba bullshit.
I know it is, but still,
yeah.
That how central the mechanics were.
Well, yeah.
To that effort. And the aviation right. at the time.
Sure.
You couldn't do anything without your ground crew.
Well, that was another thing that, apparently one of the guys I knew that was a veteran said that one of our big advantages over the Germans were that if a Jeep or something broke down, they had like 30 guys that could fix it.
Yeah, Americans.
The Germans just always abandoned. They weren't very good with cars, but that's what
How's that possible, though? See, that's counterintuitive. And I've heard the exact same thing. In World War II, Americans adapt, fix, overcome.
Yeah.
Germans. The Great Engineering Society, it broke.
Yeah.
Bring in another.
Well, a lot of that, I think, was also the way they did. I mean, like the Focke Wulf was a beautiful. Our pilots would get in a Focke Wulf, they captured, and it was like being in a Mercedes compared to what they.
Yeah.
But then again, it was so complicated and so plush and everything. And it was, and the rifles and everything were also the same thing.
Overdone.
Whereas, like the Russian, whatever the rifle they had. Drop that thing, drag it through the mud.
Yeah.
Still think of fire.
It's designed for the guy running behind you to pick up once you get shot.
Right.
Because he doesn't
have German
one.
Ammunition. They could use the German ammunition, too.
That's a multi-purpose weapon.
The Germans dropped something in the mud. It was it. That was it. It would jam. It was all over. So they're small arms. They had a lot of problems, stuff like that.
Then why did people want Lugers and stuff? Just as a collectible?
I guess. I don't know.
They weren't going to use it in practice.
I wouldn't use it on the battlefield, but yeah, just to have it as a weapon.
That's fascinating.
Yeah.
All right, so Boeington.
But anyway, he was shot down. They thought he was dead. They didn't hear anything from him for months. Picked up by a Japanese submarine in the slot. Taken to, I guess it wouldn't have been a slot 44, but maybe I guess.
No,
Solomon's,
I think you could
Solomon's.
Talk. Yeah, taken to.
And they would have taken him. Oh, he was. They took him to truck first, and then we launched Operation Hailstone, which was basically what they call the Japanese Pearl Harbor, where we just annihilated whatever fleet they had there, and he survived that, almost killed him with our friendly fire, and then they put him in a Japanese prison camp, and it was probably, he said his health actually improved because he stopped smoking and drinking like he always did, and he actually got better, because Pappy loved to drink and smoke.
I think all the pilots, come on.
Well, a lot of, the guys that were actually in VMF 214 when they made that show, and Pappy also.
What was the
crap.
Name of the squadron?
The Black Sheep.
The Black Sheep.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Okay. And that's VMF
214.
Now, is the squadron still in existence today?
In fact, they used to have a license plate, VMF 214.
Did you really?
Nobody knew what the hell it stood for. Well,
okay, but still, is that squadron still active today? Like, is there a carrier pilot?
I think they dissolved it once Pappy was dead.
Really?
I don't think it kept going. Yeah, that was it. Once they shot him down.
Oh.
Because he was the commander.
Okay.
They called him Pappy because obviously like 10 years older than anybody else. What else about that? The thing they liked, the respect, like I said, he'd take the worst plane because they had some pretty junky planes, and he took the worst one just to show. And they said that guy was absolutely fearless. He would go after 5, 10. He didn't give a shit. And that's what made it. I don't know, he was a great pilot, but he just had no fear whatsoever. And then after the war.
Well, I guess that's the only way to really do it in dogfighting situations.
Yeah, he was a wrestler. He did some pro wrestling and made his living, you know. And I'll tell you what, he was not entirely, he liked to fight. He liked to get in brawls. I think he was divorced 3 or 4 times. He was a man's man.
He fought the good fight.
We need that guy in this studio. Hail to thee, Pappy Boyington.
I love me
Bird, thou never wert.
I love me some Baba Black Sheep.
I just got a little Lenyap, an extra one. 2000, the last Schultz comic strip on this date. Peanuts. Yeah. So that could be a big one.
You know, he died the next day.
Oh, was it the next? I know he was right around there. Was literally.
We'll
talk about it.
You're talking about the publishing?
Schultz. Charles Schultz.
The last original
Peanuts.
The last one that goes in.
Yeah.
He dies the next day.
Okay.
Now, I've read the Charles Schultz biography. It's a good one, but it's dark.
We got another Steve Jobs on our hand?
No, it's just, it's hard to describe. You really, the book's interesting because the dust cover is done in the Charlie Brown shirt.
Oh, yeah.
It's instantly recognizable. But I read it, and then my daughter read it, and she goes, Dad, this is really.
He was kind of a screwed up guy, wasn't he?
It's dark.
Is he depressed? Is it depression he had?
Yeah. It's.
Yeah, bring that by. I'll read it sometime.
Yeah, it's something. All right. We end the show as we do every day.
Yes, on a gloomy note.
On the note of who exited stage right, we go to 1795, and I tell you that on January 3rd, Josiah Wedgwood.
Yeah, one of the big time pottery makers of all time, the greatest.
So, first of all, my mom loves Wedgwood.
Oh, yeah. Can she afford it?
She has a couple pieces, but she's not a collector. The color, though, is an iconic color.
Yeah, amazing, that guy.
Have you ever felt Wedgwood?
No.
Is it
gritty?
Kind of, yes. It's an unusual texture.
Not smooth, I know that.
No, it's not.
You know who was a big patron of his was Queen Charlotte.
Oh, okay.
You know the city, Charlotte, North Carolina.
Yeah, name for the queen.
Charlotte of Mecklenburg, wife of.
Oh, damn it.
George III.
George III.
And Catherine the Great liked him, too.
Why are the English so enamored with the Germans that they turned their whole royal lineage over to the Germans?
Well, we've already gone over that.
Yeah, I know. Except, I know.
You know, Anne of Cleves.
It's just amazing.
Flanders
First of all, another thing. Josiah is just a great name.
Yeah.
All right. 1946. Lord? Haha.
Oh, yeah. William Joyce, right. Propagandist. Basically, the German, Tokyo Rose, the Germans had him. He would say, Germany calling, Germany calling, Germany calling. That's how he'd open up it. And they, Lord Haha. Yeah, they hanged him good.
Why?
Because he was a traitor. In fact, I think he was the last man. I think he's the last man executed for treason in English history.
Oh.
Well,
why, though?
Hey, you can't join those. You were just bitching about the German queens.
I'm not bitching.
That's how we got back at him.
Oh, okay. Oh, that's hang the guy.
We hanged Lord Haw-Haw.
That's like hanging Baghdad Bob.
Actually, he was an Irishman, I believe, and he was already pissed off, So, yeah.
1947, deceased on this date, Al Herpin.
Yeah, interesting guy. The man who never slept. Guy never went to sleep in his life. Lived to be 94. Nobody can explain how he did how that happened. And it's
did
and there have been several men. There
did
was one
he
guy,
meditate?
I don't know. I don't think they had meditate.
Did he have like a low power cycle?
He just had a rocking chair, and that's what he.
Did he sleep with his eyes open and just trick people?
Apparently, nope.
I don't buy it for a second.
Well, there was another guy. There was actually another guy, I believe, that incurred an injury to his brain during the Civil War. Who they studied? Who didn't sleep after that? Never slept after that.
How did his body recover?
It's mystified modern medicine.
Yeah, because it's bullshit, that's why.
Oh, okay. Well, we have a skeptic.
I call bullshit.
I guess you don't believe in global warming either.
Well, that's a huge leap. 1967.
You're going to deny the Holocaust next.
All right. Oh, please. 1967, American... Again, the titles are fantastic. Right. American businessman.
Businessman?
Yeah, let's refine that. Titty bar
that's
owner.
That's a euphemism.
Titty bar owner.
Oh, all right.
And murderer.
Alleged.
Murderer. Alleged.
He did it on TV, but that's...
I think they got the guy.
I still think he's not guilty.
you need to see more evidence? Jack Ruby.
Here again, that wasn't his name, right? Was it Rubenstein or something?
Okay. Yeah, it's not his name. Okay. It's his stage
name.
Why
don't we call it? Stage
Jack
name.
Ruby, who did more to bring about the conspiratorial nature of this country than I think anyone else.
Okay.
If
it wasn't for him, they wouldn't have faked the moon landing, in other words.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah. If Jack Ruby doesn't, by happenstance, and by the way, I don't want to get into a whole thing.
Yeah, we had
but
that.
He was not sent to kill Oswald.
Right.
The chain of events that led up to that are implausible that he was ordered to go snuff Oswald. Didn't happen. Move on. 1979, Conrad Hilton. Now, there's an American businessman. Yeah. He passes away. I have stayed in his hotels.
So have I.
Including the Conrad Hilton when I was a youngster. You remember the Conrad in Chicago? Right there on South Michigan Avenue.
Sure.
As a treat, my parents would go there, stay at the Conrad.
Oh, yeah, we used to have our podiatry conferences there.
Sounds like a wonderful time.
Yeah, we had a good time. The Hilton, on Michigan Avenue.
Right on Michigan.
Yep.
What I didn't know was that they for breakfast, beautiful breakfast at the Conrad Hilton, they charged by the glass of orange juice.
That's right.
Dude. Refills were not free.
No,
my mother and I rang up a $27 bill in orange juice one morning, circa about 78.
I bet the futures went up that day.
Yeah. 2002, businessman, Dutch, Freddie Heineken. He dies.
Right, we know what business
he's in. I wonder what he did.
All right.
American football player and coach Sid Gilman passed away on this date in 2003. And sadly, the Scottish race car driver, not the actor.
Right, right.
This is a good race car driver, though. Jimmy Stewart passed away on this date in 2003. In 2012, a very good basketball coach. Saw him coach many times. His team was in the conference where I went to college at St. Louis U. He coached at Alabama, Birmingham.
Okay.
Gene Bartow.
The USA Conference?
UAB. It was Conference USA back in the day. Nice man, nice son as well. He passed away on this date in 2012. And in 2014, one of the two brothers, singer and a guitarist, Phil Everly, passes away.
Wake up, little Susie. I missed one. I missed a birth, damn it. So let's...
Yeah, let's do... let's go back. One birthday, please.
Father Damien, born 1840.
Boys Town?
No, that's Father Flanagan.
Oh, Father
Damien worked on Molokai with the lepers.
The lepers.
And he died of it.
And he died of
it. Yeah,
what
Mycobacterium.
Are the odds?
Who is the what is the only other animal to get leprosy?
A chimp.
Nine-banded armadillo.
Really?
Yep. That's correct.
And wait, Father Damien. Primates other than humans?
No, the only other animal.
They cannot get leprosy.
No.
So a gorilla, an orangutan?
Nope.
No.
Nope. Nine-banded armadillo.
How about that?
Trivia question. Yep. And now we treat it, of course. It's called Hansen's disease. Dapsone and rifampin. That's a cocktail you use.
Yep.
I actually had a chance. I used to have a leper colony down in Carville, Louisiana. And I was doing residency with my old director.
Well, you know who's Carville, Louisiana?
Yeah, Carville.
Yeah.
What about it?
Well.
That's where the lepers were. They had a colony there.
The last one in the United States.
But
another person, his family name is from there. You probably think is a leper himself. James.
James who?
Carville.
Who cares? He's okay.
He's okay with you?
Yeah, at least he's not a hypocrite. I know where he stands.
Okay.
He's a fool, but he's not a hypocrite. But anyway, I had a chance to go down there, and my residency director said, you're going to learn a lot because they have a lot of problems with their feet, including their toes falling off right in your hands. They have neuropathy, et cetera. So he said, you want to go down there with me? Because I'm going to go. He was doing a study. I said, no way. You think I am Father Damien? He didn't even know what I was talking about.
Oh.
But they canonized him and beatified him, and he deserves it. I mean, you're going to work with lepers.
Yeah, that's...
God bless you, brother.
No, it's literally what the Gospels tell you to do.
Yeah, and you know how he found out? He stuck his foot in a bathtub full of scalding water. Didn't hurt him one bit because that's the first, the pain receptors go first.
And he knew.
So he knew.
He knew. It was...
Yeah, it was... That's it. Father Damien, God bless you.
All right. All right. God bless January the 3rd. This is a good date. Lots of good stuff happened today. We'll put it to
it's
you.
Good to be back.
Well, it's good to be back. Monday through Friday, we record This Day in History here on lineupmedia.fm. Follow us on Facebook at This Day in History Podcast. And, of course, like our page on Facebook just by simply clicking the like button. And go to our website. We occasionally blog, and we'll have some more new material up for you at thisdayinhistorypodcast.com, where you can visit our fine sponsors, Amazon. We didn't have any book recommendations today. We usually do.
There's a couple on Pappy Boyington.
There is a couple on Pappy Boyington. You should look up at audible.com or amazon.com. For Armand Kachigian and producer Brian Kroc, when January 4th rolls around, we'll be here to tell you about it on lineupmedia.fm.
This podcast was a presentation of lineupmedia.fm.